Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, using corn and oilseeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 14th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with independent market analyst Dan Zwicker in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture says some of the farm bill discussion on the Hill is worrisome. There's a new farm bill proposal out there. It's called Farm 21. And a new energy proposal that would ensure the future of biodiesel. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And then just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. Stay with us for this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, wiloag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to wiloag.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. On the soft red winter wheat pit, July contract at 606.5, 17.5 cents higher. September futures at 622.5, up 17.5. And the December futures at 621.5 were up 8.5 cents on the afternoon. July corn futures at 409.5 were up 5 cents. September at 417.5, up a nickel. And December futures 2.5 cents higher at 417.5. July soybean futures 827.5. up 1.75. August contract $8.35. They were up 1.75. And November beans were up 1.25 at $8.61 on their settlement price in Chicago today. Bean meal futures, July contract $2.30.40. They were down, or rather up 40 cents. July futures up 0.29 at $35.16. And the feeder cattle at $107.57.5 were 97.5 cents higher. Live cattle futures, June contract $90.60, up 95. And August contract at $90.55 were up a dollar even. June lean hogs 7.5 cents lower at $72.70 a hundredweight. From the outside markets, July crude oil at $67.56, up 130 for the afternoon. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,567. It's up 85.36 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Thursday afternoon, as he does each and every Thursday, is independent market analyst Dan Zwicker. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
We better talk. It's been a couple of weeks since we talked to you, maybe, about what's been happening in the marketplace and the chart action. And I'd like to start with the wheat, because that's the one that has been leading the futures higher. Mostly it's been out of Kansas City, but you get your choice. Kansas City or Chicago, which would you prefer to discuss?
Well, they're both in the same camp, but Chicago is the one that we watch because that's the one that everybody here in Illinois basically raises. Hard wheat is a little different market, so I probably pay more attention to Chicago, and I think sometimes Chicago has more to say about commodity direction than Kansas City Exchange does. So, I guess there's the next target here on July wheat futures, or the lead month, is a push up here around about 632. So we are, after we cleared this 570 area with some vengeance here a couple of weeks ago, now we're kind of creeping up into the next target area here, which would be like 632.
And you think that's pretty possible, or are there things in the wheat market fundamentally that will halt the really?
Well, the only thing that worries me, I think the market is in a window here that could get a little tricky, because we are going to move into the first day of summer here next week. As you know, I kind of watch the season changes for weather pattern changes and even market trend changes. Sometimes those are events that the market kind of switches gears on. So I do think we're in a window here that one has to be a little careful with. We've had a pretty good run up. We've had a pretty good weekly advance, like in soybeans. We've been up like 7 weeks. So, you know, there, and technically we're about as overbought as you can probably get. I mean, most of your technical indicators are, for the most part, jammed. And, but, you know, when you look at, try to incorporate the fundamental side, I mean, it's basically all weather in here, and whether or not this stubborn Bermuda high that continues to keep the eastern Corn Belt in any kind of rain, whether or not that you know, breaks down and slides to the east and allows some rain in here.
We probably should note that the July, September, December contracts in the wheat poll, man, those are the lead and nearby months, all made new contract highs today at 603, 617, and 620, respectively. Probably, will they hold, or are they going to be taken out in the next couple of days? What's your
My thought? Guess is the momentum for the wheat market, I mean, it's clearly counter-seasonal, and once you get a counter-seasonal move going, moves go way beyond expectations, or at least they have a tendency to do that. And now we're beginning to hear that the yields are coming in a little smaller than expected. And with you know, the world supply demand balance sheet as tight as it is, it does suggest that there may need to be some form of supply rationing over the next you know, several months. And of course, the market has no patience; it wants to do that right away. So that's kind of where we're at, I think.
And I probably should correct myself that those were the Kansas City contracts, and they all made highs, but so did the Chicago Board of Trade wheat contracts. Let's move to the corn market. What's it look like technically over the past 2 weeks?
Well, we haven't made new highs yet for the year, so you have to say that the market is now, you know, targeting in or zeroing in on the high that we made here last winter, early spring. I forget exactly when that was. But I think this clear-cut push above the $4 area on the lead option really solidified that the market is also in a counter-seasonal move. It's still kind of tricky, depending upon which seasonal you look at. You know, and that probably depends upon whether or not the weather pattern changes next week or not. But the push above $4 on this July contract is signaling that, yeah, we're going to go on up, and we're going to put a good test in the high that was made here back in late February, here around about 437 and a quarter or so. So that's kind of where the next stopping point or the next point of resistance, we'll see where that corn puts in at.
Are you satisfied that it'll make at least that test, if not break through it?
Well, you can't tell me what the weather forecast is, but
can't do it.
But I think the you know, you have to go with the trend in the weather for the moment, and the trend in the weather is to not allow much moisture into the eastern Corn Belt. I think all your computer models you know, suggest that maybe this ridge may break down a little bit, but it's going to rebuild. And if that's the case, I think the market's just going to stay real strong, especially since we just don't have hardly any room for production error, at least at this point in time, until the Corn Belt gets a good solid rain. So the momentum is definitely to the upside here.
Once we make those contract ties, are you thinking that producers might want to consider cash sales in the December contract?
Well,
it's at 429 and a half, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, one will have to kind of judge, you know, how their own individual crop prospects are looking. But with the momentum the way it is and as wound up as the market is, I think I would probably stay a little patient here before I would be adding to anything. But I think somewhere in here, is going to be a good spot to do some selling. Now, whether or not this market stays strong all the way into that important June 29th report, that remains to be seen. But that's going to be the next real checkpoint as far as the fundamentals go, of how much corn actually got planted, whether or not we planted more or less, same way with soybeans. So that's going to be but before we get there, the market, I think, in order to calm it down or to give it some sense of ease or comfort, we're going to have to see a weather pattern shift take hold here and give the eastern half of the Corn Belt some rain.
Just for reference, settlement price was 417.5 on the December contract. A contract high is at 429.5. The low at $2.46 a bushel. Talk about soybeans for me.
Well, soybeans, they've had an awfully good run. I think they've surprised about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But the soybeans, are running. There's a couple, there are a lot of driving folks, fundamentally here. I mean, it is worried about double crop bean plantings, especially with it dry in the soft red winter wheat areas, where we get a lot of double crop beans. So that's what with the cutback in acres on full season beans, now the market is really beginning to worry that if we don't get some good moisture levels into the soft red winter wheat area, we're going to maybe lose some soybean acres or we won't get as many double crop soybean acres planted. So the bean market is fundamentally, I think, worrying about that, as well as, deteriorating crop rating levels with the dryness here in the eastern half. But so it's pretty much a weather market as well as corn, as wheat. So but we have been up here for about 7 weeks. The market is ripe, at least technically, for a period of consolidation, if not anything else, until we maybe get a little better handle on what's going to happen on this weather pattern in the next couple of weeks.
And so all in all, on the fundamental side, what do producers need to keep an eye on? The weather in case we get rainfall, and I suppose we'd have to have a pretty decent rainfall in the eastern part of the Corn Belt. The acreage report, which is due out at the end of the month, anything else?
No, I think those are the key things. Now, the key thing is how you read the weather and how you play the weather. If we do get some rain in here, even though it may not be what one would consider a very adequate rain, the fact that you got rain in here would maybe suggest that the weather pattern might begin to shift. You have to be a little worried on that. But it's pretty much a weather game here for the next 2 weeks, and then we'll see what USGA tells us here at the end of the month.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with an independent market analyst out of Bloomington, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own AM 580's Mike Sola forecast for tonight says in the eastern part of Indiana, skies will be partly cloudy. There will be a chance for a few showers there overnight. Elsewhere, mostly clear. Lows will range between 60 and 65. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. Highs between 85 and 92. Tomorrow, the winds will be very light. Less than 5 miles an hour. Great for spraying. Minimum relative humidity levels will range between 30 and 40%. Dew point temperatures will climb into the lower 60s. The extended forecast, the prospects for precipitation early next week have been reduced in most recent computer forecasts. Showers are expected to develop along a cold front starting on Monday in western Illinois and departing eastern Indiana late Tuesday night, but amounts and coverages have been cut. In today's agricultural news, according to U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns, USDA heard a pretty clear message from farmers and ranchers during the department's farm bill listening sessions. Now Johanns says farmers want an equitable system that provides more predictability, and he says the extensive farm bill proposal he introduced in January does just that. But what that he's hearing from the farm bill discussion coming from the House and the Senate doesn't compare at all to that proposal. In comparison, Johanns says the things he's hearing are worrisome.
What I'm hearing, for example, is that we're going to head in a direction where our fruit and vegetable farmers are specialty crop commodity farmers are caught in a situation where the funding they receive will be what's called discretionary. Discretionary funding really isn't funding at all. If it isn't made mandatory, the likelihood of it happening is pretty well non-existent. In our proposals, all of our funding for our program crops, our research, our market promotion, our purchases of more specialty crops for nutrition programs was mandatory funding.
While Johann says he recognizes it's early in the process, he really is struggling with the lack of predictability. Congressional ag leaders are currently offering producers of specialty crops. Speaking of different farm bill proposals, Wisconsin 3rd District Congressman Ron Kind, along with Arizona's Jeff Flake and New York's Joe Crowley and Washington's David Rickert, have officially introduced the Food and Agricultural Risk Management for the 21st Century Act, or Farm 21. By reforming the nation's ag policy over the next 5 years, Kind says the legislation will prepare American farmers to compete domestically and abroad in the global marketplace. He says the measure does not cut the legs out from under producers, but helps them establish risk management accounts. He says they can put money in, let it grow tax-free, and access the funds to supplement income when farm income drops, to purchase more crop insurance, and more. But he says the key is decoupling payments from price and production, which are market-distorting and trade-distorting.
Either we try working for reform proposals ourselves in this next farm bill, or it's going to be done for us through these challenges with WTO. But boy, when you've got corn tickling $4 a bushel, beans at $8, wheat at $5.50, farm income going up, milk class 3 with premium prices about, you know, $20. And for years, farmers have always told me, listen, if we could just get a decent price at the marketplace, we wouldn't have to be so dependent and reliant on these government subsidy programs. Well, that ship has finally come in.
According to Kind, current farm policy favors multi-million dollar commodity producers over family farmers, but Farm 21, he says, would change that, providing a more effective safety net that's more fiscally responsible and spends available dollars more efficiently.
Let's be smarter in the limited resources that we have to help farmers and farming communities and rural America. And there are other high-priority areas that have received short shrift in past years that really do need more assistance.
Kind says the Farm 21 makes that possible, finding some $20 billion in savings over the next 5 years. He says that can be reinvested in the areas that need additional assistance, like research, nutrition, specialty crops, biofuels, and conservation. According to Kind, there's pent-up demand for conservation assistance due to the inadequacy of funds. He says Farm 21 can rectify that, but also says despite his support for payment limits, the conservation payment caps don't make sense. Farm 21 co-sponsors introduced the measure just after the Environmental Working Group unveiled an expanded version of its farm program payment database. We'll stay on Capitol Hill and switch gears from the farm bill to energy. There's, of course, plenty of talk about energy on Capitol Hill this week, with news that Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois introduced legislation that would ensure the future of biodiesel. Called the Biodiesel Promotion and Quality Assurance Act, the program would boost the amount of biodiesel and bio-based replacement diesel that refiners blend to 1.25 billion gallons by the year 2012. Working with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency may be easier for the ag community thanks to a new website launched this week. The site provides a lookup tool listing federal environmental regulations that could impact agriculture. Knowing the rules beforehand would allow farmers to address issues before they become a problem. The site, which is an outgrowth of EPA's National Strategy for Agriculture, aims to improve communications, collaboration, and innovation within the ag community, according to the press statement. You can check it all out at www.epa.gov/agriculture/lawhtml. Just search for epa.gov/agriculture. And finally today, farmers across the country have seen the stories both nationally on the big networks and on local television stations. Food prices are rising, and corn is the culprit. While corn prices are up about 33% from where they were a year ago, the impact of that price rise is a much smaller part of the food cost increase than being reported. That, according to a study released this morning by the Renewable Fuels Association. Plain and simple, corn prices are not the sole reason or even the major reason for the high prices in the grocery aisle today, says Bob Denon. He's the CEO of the RFA. In fact, the study notes that the boost in corn prices could have had no more than a 0.3% impact on the increase in food prices, while a similar increase in energy cost accounts for about a 0.6 to a 0.9% increase in the rise of food prices, or more than twice the impact. Denon says there is a concerted effort by the oil industry to fight off ethanol and its growth in a public relations battle that brings livestock and poultry people out against ethanol. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market. Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, now joins us. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me, in your area, farmers are so busy that they haven't really been paying attention to what's been happening in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think everybody's pretty busy out there getting spraying done, stuff like that. They seem to be pleased to hear what the markets are doing, of course, but would like to see some showers, that's no doubt.
And they like the showers. Are they pleased and not paying attention because most of them have themselves covered with crop insurance, you think?
Well, I think that's part of it. But I think it's just, you know, you go to the priority task, and their priority task right now is getting their acres covered and getting the spraying done, and that's what they got to concentrate on. That's one of the reasons hopefully people like ourselves can help farmers out, because we can keep an eye on things while they're busy with something else.
Yeah, what are you keeping an eye on today then?
Well, the corn basis, a couple of things. Corn basis is kind of a mixed bag. It's the weaker, steady weaker, except for the train values out to the southwest and southeast. They seem this week to have stayed real strong. I noticed yesterday you talked to Kay there, and she was saying southeast, same way in the southwest. Feeder markets seem to be pretty good into the chicken markets and that. Processor and the river been, you know, steady to a little bit weaker. The soybeans, I think, on new crop basis levels, I'm just sitting here with my chin on the desk sometimes. You're seeing some river values, new crop for fall at 80 under or more, and I just can't. That's just, I didn't think I'd ever see that, probably, but that's what we're seeing. And it really makes it difficult from a farmer viewpoint to decide what to do. I think, you know, you've almost got to look at storage in a situation like that, but yet the price levels are good, so sometimes you just have to close your eyes and sell it, I think.
You think so, to sell the cash grain side of it, or do you cover yourself somewhere on the futures market and then wait and see how things work out?
Well, I think that depending on the situation, if you're taking the grain in at harvest time, I don't know that you want to necessarily wait for harvest. I'm not sure that it'll be, there's no guarantee it'll be any better than that.
Yeah.
Sometimes, though, in a lot of cases, there are some carry in the market, and you can go out and, you know, find a place to store it and sell it for January or something like that, and come out better than you can by selling that basis at fall.
All right, and your bids for the day are?
$3.91 on the corn, $7.87, excuse me, on the beans.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks.
And that's Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Pete Levitt. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A lawsuit against Champaign-Urbana's two largest medical clinics, Carl and Christie, alleges that the clinic's agreement to turn away new Medicaid patients left those patients without suitable health care. Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office officially filed the suit today in Champaign County. It claims the clinics adopted virtually identical policies to limit services in an effort to boost the size and speed of reimbursements from the state. Carl and Christie acknowledge that they limited new patients, but they say they did not conspire to do so. The suit asks for civil penalties and damages. It also asks for an injunction to require the clinics to enroll more Medicaid patients. Police are talking to a man who was found where a woman and three children were shot to death inside an SUV in Will County. Police say they've not made any arrests in the case yet. The SUV was found this morning on a service road off I-55 near the town of Shanahan. Police aren't releasing names until the victim's relatives have been notified. There's no word yet on Michael Lambert's appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Unless the high court intervenes, Lambert will be executed in Indiana shortly after midnight tonight for the 1990 murder of a Muncie police officer. Legislation to let Champaign area governments quickly purchase land along the I-57 Curtis Road interchange is now before the governor. The so-called quick-take measure passed the House this morning and the Senate last month. It would allow Champaign and Savoy, as well as Champaign County, to seize property without landowners' permission. Senate sponsor Mike Frerich says using eminent domain can take a long time in the courts, and quick-take is needed to take advantage of a federal grant for the Curtis Road project. The measure still allows landowners to negotiate a fair price in the courts. 15th District Congressman Tim Johnson was a successful lawyer who made a lot of money in his career. But his financial disclosure report released today shows he's also doing fine as a lawmaker. The Urbana Republican received more than $165,000 last year as a member of the U.S. House. But the 60-year-old Johnson, who was a state representative for 24 years, also received Illinois pension payments of nearly $60,000. Altogether, Johnson took in $226,000 because he's been repeatedly elected to represent Illinoisans either in Springfield or Washington. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL. By the way, as of today, we still must raise some $338,500 to reach our fundraising goal. That means our gas gauge reads 84% full. You can help power the engines so WILL can bring you a full year of programs and services. Just call us at 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support today. You can also do that online at willpledge.org. That's willpledge.org. If you can't remember that one, I know you can remember this one because I repeat it every day. willag.org. Look for pledge up at the top of the page. Be kind and pledge your financial support to WILO Radio. We bring you ag programming 6 days a week. Part of that ag programming, of course, includes Pete Levitt on Thursday afternoon's meteorologist to talk about the agricultural weather forecast across the Midwest and around the globe. He's on the line now. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We've been repeating things on the radio for a long time because that's the way you get things done. Repeat, 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 and it sure seems like every time we talk to you about the weather forecast, it's wet in the west and dry in the east.
Yeah, it certainly demonstrates the importance of persistence in weather patterns and the like. That's how we get droughts in the first place. If the weather weren't persistent, why, it wouldn't stay dry long enough to get a drought. But we've got very dry conditions continuing in the eastern Corn Belt. The best dividing line on average seems to be the Mississippi River. From there on eastward, we're looking at a mostly dry pattern until you get well out into the upper Ohio Valley. They're getting a little bit more moisture there. And when you look to the west of the Mississippi, it's nothing but wet. And that wetness starts in the southern plains, runs all the way up to the Canadian and border and beyond, and manages to spread eastward to cover a good portion of Iowa and Minnesota as well. So what does this all mean? It means that the wet get wetter and the dry areas get a little drier. And when you start to get extremes of moisture, you start to have problems with crops. The forecast is pretty straightforward. We've got this warm weather today. Temperatures will continue to flirt with the 90-degree mark across Illinois and western Indiana, eastern Iowa for the next several days, right through the weekend. The first good chance of getting some showers into the area, well, let's call it the first chance. We'll leave out the good, but the first chance of showers will be probably around next Tuesday when some cooler and air spilling down from the northwest pushes maybe far enough south to catch Illinois and give us a little relief from the dryness. Meanwhile, it stays wet right up through the central plains. It's too wet in the winter wheat areas. That's why that crop has not shown much improvement since the freeze way back in April. It's had the cool temperatures, but it has not had the dryness it needs. And in the northern spring areas, it's just too wet to get things going the way they'd like it to go. And so we see some problems there and across parts of the Canadian prairies.
And then if maybe you could talk just a bit about the drought that we know is actually happening in parts of California, but more importantly, in the southern part of the United States, in the southeastern states, where the drought monitor says extreme drought and exceptional drought, actually, which is even worse in parts of, Louisiana and Alabama.
Right. The core of that extends from central Mississippi across and touches Louisiana right through Alabama and northern Georgia, southern Tennessee. There's no sign that that's going to see relief anytime soon. That's stuck in the middle between some moist air along the Atlantic coast and the moisture that we talked about from Texas to the Dakotas. They're still in that dry area. I don't see much change in that until we finally maybe get a little action in the Gulf of Mexico from easterly wave activities. That's probably several weeks away, maybe a month or so away. And then finally, looking at California, in just 2 weeks, we're going to be looking at the completion of their precipitation season, which runs from July 1st to June 30th. And Los Angeles, for example, is going to have their driest year on record, as other communities in the area will have as well.
Pete, we'll check in with you again next week.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Leavitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning for our first look at the ag markets. That happens at 8:49. Commodity Week on Saturday at 11:30. And you can find them all right there on our website at willag.org. While you're there, look at the top of the page and hit pledge. We've got just a few more days to make our goals for the year. Everything's got to be in the bank by the time we get to the end of the month, so that we can use it for next year. You have a good day. I'm Todd Gleason.